I applaud and celebrate your perseverance and your dedication and continuing to meet together like this as a group for these 2 years and possibly longer. And it's a wonderful thing you're doing. As we all know, this world of ours is sorely in need of the Dharma, and to the extent that you can help manifest that and share it, we'll all be better off. I think you know that. My role here today, I heard a rumor that you're working with mindfulness. So I thought I would address that topic somewhat. And I understand also that you have been looking through and reading and studying the Satipatthana Sutta, the Foundation of Mindfulness Discourse. And so I'm going to draw my inspiration from that text. And what I want to do this afternoon is try to explore with you some of the finer textures of what this practice is all about and what this text in particular is offering us as a way of exploring the field of experience. I think I recall when I was here last, one of the things we did together was take a single text and work with it as a living instruction for meditation. And I think you'll find a lot of the suttas really work like that. The Buddha was, after all, giving Dharma talks in his lifetime. Those Dharma talks were, by and large, recalled and preserved for us. Some changes probably here and there, but such as the oral tradition. And in these Dharma talks, you know, the Buddha was addressing a number of people in a lot of different contexts and so forth. But this particular text, the Satipatthana Sutta, he seems to be addressing to adepts, to people, primarily monks and nuns, although lay people were renowned for practicing mindfulness in the Buddha's time, but to people who were willing and able to take seriously and with great dedication the nuanced exploration of the human condition. What mindfulness training is revealing to us, what the Buddha is revealing in this whole tradition really, is the extent to which our world consists of moments of awareness, moment after moment strung together into a stream of consciousness. And you know, we know that word from William James and we use it in colloquial speech, but it's really only in the meditation hall that we're able to fully appreciate what that means and what that looks and feels like. So what I want to do this afternoon is go through the fourth foundation of mindfulness with you as a guided meditation. Now, I'm sure you've read this text. I'm sure you know that it, you know, consists of these 108 meditation subjects, the five hindrances, the five aggregates, the six sense spheres, the seven factors of awakening, the four noble truths, all in numerous aspects. What you may not be as familiar with is working through them consistently as a form of active guided meditation. And so that's what I want to try with you. Now, I did come prepared to go through all 108 topics exhaustively, but I've come to realize that since you all just had lunch and you're unlikely to be at the peak of your stamina, I thought we'd maybe do portions of it this afternoon instead of the whole thing. So this is what I have in mind. I want to walk you step by step through the first 25 of the 108 objects of mindfulness in the fourth foundation of mindfulness. This will be the hindrances. Working with the hindrances, not just as an idea. I mean, you all are very familiar with the hindrances, I'm sure, from numerous Dharma talks, from maybe even some personal experience. They may have emerged from time to time in your stream of consciousness, but just in case you've missed any, We're going to go through them systematically. And then the other thing after that I'd like to do is just pause for some significant period of time, perhaps 10, perhaps 20 minutes, to allow the state of mind that emerges upon the temporary abandoning of the hindrances to manifest and to sink in. As you probably know, that traditionally, the abandoning of the hindrances is the first and necessary step for accessing deep concentration. That really, once the hindrances are temporarily set aside, jhana practice begins. So what I think you will naturally discover this afternoon, and I'm sure many of you have already, is that when we use the Buddha's list of mind states that are obstacles for meditation, and we go through that list systematically and follow his specific instructions to abandon each of these mind states systematically, one after another, that what we will come to at the end of that is a naturally concentrated mind, a naturally peaceful mind, a mind that is ready to begin focused awareness, and that the states of tranquility and calm and so forth will naturally emerge. As you probably know, in the jhana formula that's found all over the place in the text, the first phrase of the formula is something like, having abandoned the hindrances, a person then, you know, practices jhana. So my intention here is not to do jhana meditation. I'm not qualified for that, and I'm sure you can get, you know, more of that elsewhere. What I do want to do, however, is simply not overlook the details of the Buddha's instructions in mindfulness. And at least in this particular sliver of what he's saying, I want to try to walk through it as a sort of experiential episode. And then after that, we'll have some discussion about it, perhaps some questions. Then I think we'd probably need a break. And then for the second half of the afternoon, I thought instead of doing the other long list, that we would focus on the seven factors of awakening and try to do the same sort of guided meditation. So between the hindrances, which are obstacles to practice, and the factors of awakening, which are the real powers and jewels that allow us to deepen in the practice, we would have gotten the essence, I think, of the Satipatthana Sutta, at least the fourth foundation. So, are you with me on that? You want to try? Okay.